Sweet. Hi, well, thank you for coming, everyone. My name is Danilo Diaz. I'm a developer evangelist with Microsoft out of Philadelphia. So I typically come to New York a lot these days to talk about Windows Phone and Silverlight and all that good stuff. So whenever if you have any questions around Windows Phone, you have an app idea that you want to implement, feel free to talk to me. I have a couple phones that I can lend you for a week or so. Actually, not a week, probably 2 weeks. Or even a little bit more. So just take my contact information. You can ask me any question you want, and I will try to do my best to give you the right answer. Right. So, all right. Now, so the topic of this, the title, I changed it actually from the one that we did on Saturday. And what I want to concentrate is basically how MVVM saved me, right, on the application that I was developing, but it also came back to bite me when I stopped using it within the same application. So Miguel talked about how it's typically very hard to get started with MVVM, right? It's not the easiest thing to get your applications going. So it takes some effort at the beginning, it takes some discipline, but it typically does come back to save you a lot of time in the long run. So before I go into MVVM, though, I saw a presentation a couple months ago that was done by a guy named Sean Bucker. He's an architect out of Microsoft, out of the Silverlight team, and he was talking about code programmability and basically sharing code between WPF and Silverlight and Windows Phone and all that stuff. And I thought that it was very appropriate to the stuff that we're talking about today. So I'm going to give you kind of like a little recap of what he was talking about, and that will make sense once I get to the towards the end. So first of all, how many of us have tried to basically reuse the code that we write for one application and reuse it in another application? So that's something pretty common that we all do, right? I'll say like 90% of people raise their hands. But it's also something very hard to accomplish, right? We say we want to do it, but it turns out it's not an easy thing to do. The reason for it is because the whole concept of write once and then run it everywhere, it really doesn't work, right? You can try to make it work, but it just doesn't work. And a lot of times what we end up doing is we end up doing a software pattern described as called copy and paste inheritance, right? Where we take code from one place and we copy somewhere else. Where we're using the code, right? The problem with that is that whenever you find a bug on that code, you typically only fix it in one place, right? So the bug always comes back, and I thought we fixed that. Well, yeah, you fixed that in this branch, but we never got to fix it in the other branch. So that never works. Even when you try things like Java, for instance, when we try to write Java applications to run, client applications to run both in Windows and the Mac, yeah, we can get that to work, but the application doesn't look good on Mac or Windows. Right? It actually looks like a bastardized version of an application because it doesn't have any identity. It doesn't look like a Windows application. It doesn't look like a Macintosh, like a Mac application. So that really doesn't work. Now, if we're talking about what we create to share between applications, and we need to target multiple frameworks, we typically have to write things like, well, if I'm running on WPF, I'm going to do this. If I'm running on Silverlight, I'm going to do that. The problem with that is that you start branching your code, and it becomes a nightmare, right, because you're writing similar functionality for Silverlight and then from WPF, and that doesn't really work. Right? That's also a nightmare. The other thing is, like, we don't only just want to share the code. We actually want to share the binaries. Right? And there's a lot of reasons for that. For instance, anybody here works for the pharmaceutical industry? In Philly, there's like maybe, Miguel does use it intensively. By the way, I can attest that he is a Twilight fan. I saw the T-shirts. I saw the book he was reading. So he is a fan. You are a fan of Twilight. Man, so I didn't see his tattoo, though. So maybe he's right about that. Maybe he doesn't have it yet. All right, so we do want to share the actual binaries. In the pharmaceutical industry, there's some regulations that whenever you recompile code, you have to typically retest that application, right? There's some regulations that basically says, hey, once your code gets compiled, you have to retest it, right? So that would be a perfect example of why we actually want to share the binaries, right? It would be great not to have to retest the applications if we don't have to. Between Silverlight 4 and WPF, the binaries are actually compatible nowadays. So you can actually run a WPF DLL. You can run that in Silverlight, but it doesn't work with Windows Phone yet. The point is that we want to be able to share the actual binaries. Now, we don't want to share UI typically because the UI is totally different between a Windows Phone application and a desktop application. Right? You just don't want to do that. There's the real estate is different. The paradigm is different. There's things on my Windows Phone that I just don't have on my desktop. Right? I have a GPS sensor here. I have an accelerometer. Things that I don't have on my desktop on this particular model that I have here. Right? So the UI is going to be totally different because I want to make sure that I make the experience specific for my device. Now, you do share some code, especially with the way SAML works. I mean, it is perfectly acceptable for you to develop a user control state that has a list box, and then through theming, you can totally change the look of that text list box through theming, and you can basically just have different themes between a CLI application and a Windows Phone application, but that's not typically something that you would do. Yeah. So people always ask, well, why can't I just run a CLI application on the phone? Well, again, just totally separate set of APIs, number one. Right? Windows Phone doesn't have the concept of a browser because the CLI applications on the phone, they run natively. Right? So if you have an app that for whatever reason is interacting with the DOM, with the HTML DOM on the desktop, that's not going to work down on a Windows Phone. Again, the screen size is different. The input methods are different. So that doesn't really work. Even if you try to stub out the APIs, maybe you're missing, you're missing one of the methods that is available, CLI desktop version versus the Windows Phone. You can always stub it out, the extension methods and things like that. But again, you're just trying to put a band-aid to the problem. You can get away with it, but it's not something that, you know, that is typically recommended. Overall conclusion is application programmability is typically not something that we can do very good today, right? We need a better solution. So the good news is that the folks up in Redmond, they have been thinking about this problem and how to fix it, right? So they're coming with an idea of how they can actually allow developers to create libraries that will be easily portable between, say, the full version of the framework. Right, so .NET 4.0, maybe Silverlight, Windows Phone, Xbox, and whatever else is coming down the line. Right, maybe we have a framework for car, antennas or something. I don't know, whatever it might be coming up next. The idea is that we want to be able to reshare that. Can somebody score the man out? So now I lost you. You lost my, I thought. What was I trying to say here? Okay, so they're coming up with a solution that will allow us to basically have a way to comment and to target one common set of APIs to allow us to literally take that those DLLs and port it, the actual binaries, port it from application to application, from platform to platform. Right, so that's actually in the works today, and we are calling it. I'll get back to that in a second. We're calling it the Portable Library Project. That's something that's coming soon. It's actually available today on CPP. You can download it. You can play around with it. But basically, this is the overall idea. Let's say I have a CLI application, and I create a DLL called MyAssembly, Danny's Assembly or whatever, and that's going to execute against the MS Core Lib framework. Now, then, I move that application to, say, a WPF application, maybe even a WCS service that, I have a common functionality in that library that I want to migrate over. The problem is that once that library tries to execute, it's going to try to execute against MS Core Lib 2, right, because that's what it was compiled to. Well, the portable work that we did in .NET 4.0 allows us to basically the framework to realize, hey, you know what, he's really meaning to execute MS Core Lib 4. We have that available, right? So there's some compiler trickery on the background that allows us to basically execute against the current version of the library. All, right, all done by the framework, nothing that you have to worry about. Some typical scenarios or common scenarios are things that we want to port. Business logic, right? The tax rules for the state of New York will be the same if you're working on a desktop application or if you're working on a mobile application, right? It's going to be the same tax rules. So that's a perfect thing that we might want to migrate over to a portable library. But notice the one that I have here on the bottom, ViewModels. Right? It's a perfect scenario to do is basically to create view models that are portable between platforms. Why? Because chances are that you might want to provide that functionality that you have on a desktop application to your mobile application. Right? Maybe you have a tablet application for the guys on the field that you're creating specifically to their line of work or their current situation. That you might want to create an application that targets just them. Maybe they're using a rugged device on the truck that just takes input from touch or maybe from a stylus. Right? So it's a totally different application, but you still want to be able to share some of the logic that you develop. So the view models is a perfect candidate for sharing code. Now, this is kind of what a portable library project would look like. You typically will have a core project. That core project will be your portable library project. And then everything else, every other project that you have, which is basically be referencing that core project. Let me give you a quick demo of that. If I go to Project New, I gotta get my mouse on. Ready? Hold on one second. I can simply just go into C#, right, Windows, and create a portable class library. Click OK. Notice what it does. It gives me a very limited view of the things that I can actually reference. If I go to Add Reference, I get a very small subset of what's actually available to me if I had not done that, right? If I had not selected a portable project. And now,
what's the framework type that it chose for you?
Yes. So you can see there it's going to filter for all of them.
Right?
This is 60p right now. So I can change the target. I can just simply just go in.
Question. Yeah. Framework. Is the client profile only?
No. It allows me to do the entire. The properties, where is the thing I'm missing? There you go, change. So I can change it and say, you know what, I actually just want to be able to run this against the Silverlight framework and also XNA. So it's going to give me options based on the target frameworks that I'm converting. Basically, what this is going to do, it's going to give me a safeguard, right, so that I don't implement things that I just don't have access to in other frameworks. So for instance, this will allow me to work around with files. However, it doesn't allow me to work with the actual file I've pointed to a file, meaning a file class. Why? Because Windows Phone doesn't have the concept of a file. Right? So in that case, what it's going to give me is the ability to work with streams. Right? Because I can talk to a stream in Windows Phone, and I can talk to a stream in Silverlight, but I cannot talk to a file in Silverlight because Silverlight is using isolated storage. Make sense? So it basically just gives me a subset of the functionality that will be available across platforms. Now, there's two issues with this version right now. Number one, it is CTP, right? Community Technical Preview. It's the very, very first preview that we have for this technology, which means that it's somewhat limited. So, in fact, I'm going to show you a little demo there that the guy who wrote this gave me. He's doing some view model work with this framework. However, we don't have access to the Observable Collection class because in this current version of the project, it's not available. Right, it is now. In fact, it's not released yet, but we already have that piece working, so it will be available on the next release, hopefully. But let me show you that that demo there, so you can kind of see what I'm talking about. So I have three projects here. One of them is, can you guys see that okay, by the way? That's just a little utility to download files. All right, so here's my project, right? I have a portable observable collection. Just come here real quick and right here. So I have portable observable collection, a Silverlight application, and a Windows Phone application. So my common logic is going to be here. Okay? Now, turns out that, again, I don't have access to to observable collection, which is basically what allows Silverlight to do the two-way binding, right? To be able to bind to the model and to the view two ways. What I've done here is I've implemented this functionality as a regular iList, because observable collection is actually inherits from iList, right? So because I can do a conversion later on this portable project side of things, so the common code, I'm just going to implement this as an iList, right? Which basically gives me the ability to add to the collection, and that's pretty much all I need for now. So this is very simple. It's going to be an iList of strings, and that's basically all I'm implementing right now. Obviously, I got to implement the iProperty change notify, so that when I change something, it will notify the framework if something has just changed, or property has changed, and that's pretty much it. Now, the trickery here, and this is available, I'll put a pointer to the guy's blog who wrote this so you can see how he did it. But basically, what we're going to do is just create a simple factory so that we can then ask the portable library to return that observable type. Actually, it's going to return the iList type collection, and then we're going to cast that to an observable collection. So here, simply, this is going to return an instance of itself, and it's going to allow me to then return the actual iList, right, which is the collection that we're going to create. Now, every single implementation, then every single application, is simply going to implement that factory, but instead of returning iList, it's going to return an observable collection, right? And then once I have an observable collection, that's basically all I need. Make sense? So if I just run this real quick. One view model for both applications. Here I have the Windows Phone page, so you can see that I can add items to the list. And the same application there. It's running on the Silverlight side. So if I do new instance of the Silverlight application, same thing. Right, so I'm basically just nothing fancy here, but the business logic is just holding some dates that I'm putting into to the collection. But you can see that the same logic is being used for both applications. Just getting the concept, right? I'm basically just sharing my view models with my application. Why do you want to do that, right? Why do I want to create multiple versions of the application? Well, think of Netflix. Right? Netflix is probably the number one now online movie rental company out there. Even though there's a lot bigger players than it, you know, in this market, actually took down Blockbuster. Blockbuster's actually going on bankruptcy now. Yeah. So, but why have they done that? Why haven't they been able to get sort of much momentum? They're everywhere, right? I can download Netflix on my phone. I can use it on my PC. I can use it on my Xbox, right? The Kindle app, right? I actually ended up buying the hardware, the actual Kindle hardware, after using it on my phone. So they get you, they expose the application to every single client possible. Now, don't you think that they're reusing some of that logic somewhere out there, right? Or they're rewriting the application for scratch every single time? Most likely, I would like to think that they're reusing something there. So this is the idea, right? I'm going to create an application that I have developed for Windows Phone, and I want to migrate that to the desktop. Now, before I show you the app, I'm just going to put a couple disclaimer. I built this application on my own time. It was an application that I did to solve the problem that I had. And after I did, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I decided to talk about it, right, to just show people how I did it. I'm not evangelizing the application itself, right, just the techniques that I used to develop the application. And so the application is actually a Christian application. So that's why I'm just giving you the heads up now. I'm not trying to persuade you to my way of life. If you did, great. If you want to talk about it afterwards, great. Right? But that's not what I'm here for. I just want to show you the code. So let's go to the application. Right? So let's go. It's your studio. Let me close this one. I have multiple versions. I just have to make sure I grab the right one. Here it is. And this is in the marketplace today. It works, you know, it's great. Show it to you real quick. Takes a little bit to download to initialize the emulator. Anyway, here it is. So the idea is that it allows me to grab the current services or teaching studies from the church. This is all being brought in through an RSS feed. But I also have a collection that I have internally. I have a catalog of hundreds and hundreds of studies on an XML file. Not the actual studies, just the reference information. So if I click, say, on Genesis or Exodus, it gives me the ability to now search by pastor study, right? Topical, verse by verse, special, interest, or whatever. And then once I click on an item, it takes me to the playing page. So what it should be doing, it's not going to do it because it's running on an emulator, so the emulator doesn't play audio. But it will typically be playing audio now, and I can fast forward, I can do a whole bunch of stuff, and I can follow what he's saying, not the actual transcript, but I can point to the reference of the scripture that he's talking about. So that way I can keep him honest, I guess. All right, so that's the app. Now, from a development point of view, when I started doing this app, I started getting into MVVM. I'm like, okay, I kind of see the concept. To me, MVVM, and this, you know, this is what Miguel says, a very loosely pattern, and it is, because to me, I don't care about the commanding and stuff. Why? Because I don't have commanding available on Windows Phone. If I had it available, I'll probably use it, but I don't have it. So I can't really strive to have nothing on the code behind, because I am going to have stuff in the code behind. I have no way to get out of that. So to me, is what I want to be able to do is just provide the view with all the data that it needs. But that's, to me, that's the role of the view model. It's give me, you know, I have this view here that I have designed or designed and created. I need to be able to provide the view to that, the data to that view. In fact, I've heard of companies using MVVM where they have totally separate teams, right? They have a team of designers and a team of developers, and basically the requirements go out. You know, the developers get the requirement, look, I need this view with this amount of data. And then the designer goes in and says, you know, I need a view implemented that's going to show X, Y, and Z. And these guys are not even working together. They develop it separately, and then they bring it back together, and everything works, right, because they have one set of requirements. One thing is just how to display the data. The other requirement is what data to get. Right? So they don't even need to know that one exists. Like Miguel said, you know, the view model doesn't need to be coupled. In fact, it shouldn't be coupled to the actual view. Right? You have a question? So the question is that this morning Miguel told you that the view model was all about binding. But he also said that it's a very loosely pattern, right? So people implement it differently. Now, my goal is also to do all the to have a view model that allows me to bind everything to that view model. I mean, that's what I'm saying, right? No, it has nothing to do with Model View Presenter. It's a totally, yeah. So that's a good question. Your question, you know, what's the difference then between a presenter model, MVP, versus an MVVM? With a presenter pattern, typically the first hit, so when the user calls, you know, an ASP, that net page, web forms, right, it's actually hitting the view first. Right? So the view is attached almost. I mean, it's the first request comes into the view. Then the view goes in and figures out, you know, the presenter, and then it shows the actual view. With MVVM, you don't have that, right? You don't have a controller, number one, because nothing is in the middle sitting there. The user actually goes in, the view appears, and the view tries to figure out, well, how am I going to get my data? So it's a totally different paradigm from the MVP and the MVVM. The idea is, the point that I'm trying to make, and we can take this offline if I can explain it right. The idea is that you got to stop, you know, you got to go to the other side so you don't keep me laughing. The idea is that, for me, MVVM means the view model is all of the data that I need to satisfy the view, right? Now, once I have that data, I'm going to use binding, right? Because I do want to use the binding, because I love the two-way binding.
There may be a point of confusion on the terminology you're using. When Danny's calling data, I refer to a state, but it's the exact same thing.
Yeah. So the M in the model is obviously your business data. It's your the stuff that you're either sending to a database or getting from a database or sending to a service. To me, the state, as Miguel Cole said, is the actual data that you're viewing, data that is being displayed. So in this case here, my data in this case is just a list of studies, right? So every single item here is actually an actual study class that has the name of the study, the description of the study, where to get it, where to get the audio, where to get the Bible reference, all that good stuff is in there. Which is another reason for that I love Silverlight is that, you know, I'm not sure if Miguel mentioned this earlier, but with Windows Form or ASP.NET web forms, when you have a list box, the items that go inside of the list box, they're basically list items, right? Value, property name. Right? So when you get the information back, you get that, you get an item view back, right? You basically get a property name and a property value. With Silverlight and WPF, you don't get that. You actually get the item that you bound to. So because I'm binding here to actual item view models, when I select one of these guys, I get that object back. Right? So I don't have to go and get it and cast the information from my database. I actually have it with me. So that's why, to me, the idea of having everything in one class that I can then reference, that I can test, it was huge. All right, so let me show you some of the code here. All right, so I started dividing, organizing my code a little bit, and I figured, you know, I need some helpers to allow me to get some data. I need to be able to grab RSS speed and things like that. I need some images. It would be a good idea maybe to separate my view models, right? Item view model, in this case, is the actual items that I'm displaying. I should probably call this study view model, right, because it's the actual entity of a study. Then I have my main view model, which is the main page, and I have select study view model, so that stuff. So I divided that there. And then everything else is actually application-specific stuff, right? This is the SAML. I typically not going to share this code, so that's going to stay there. Right? So then what I did, I had an idea to actually take the functionality from this application and migrate it to the desktop. Why? Again, I want to make sure that I have this data, in this case, these studies, available to everyone. So I thought, hey, you know, somebody might want to be at work listening, you know, to these studies. Why don't I provide a way for them to do so, right? Maybe if they stop in the middle of a study and then get in the car to go home, maybe I give them the opportunity to keep things in sync, right, so that wherever they left off, I will be able to continue that study from the car via the phone application. And so I'm like, that would be a great idea, right? Getting the idea from the Kindle. And that's the way the Kindle works. So I said it's time for me to develop a desktop version of my application. So I went in, and I started creating that. I think it's this one here. Yep. This one. Yep. So I said, okay, I need to start dividing things. So the first thing I did was I created a project called View Models. Right? So I migrated a whole bunch of functionality here. Number one, all of my entities that I was referring to, channel for the RSS feed, the actual items, the item view model, everything that I needed, I brought over to my view model, so I took my project. So here I have everything that I need to actually get data that I need to display my applications, I brought into this project. Right? Now, not my business model, just my view model, right? Well, but my business model then should be in a different project. Right? I don't want to bring my view models into this project because I might have a WCF application, right, that I just want to access those models. So my business model, my business object should not be included within the project of my view models. No, because what I would typically do is I have a business layer, a business model project, and then my view models will call my business model and get the data from there, if that's the way I want to do it. All right, so I would never put a business, I'm sure if maybe Miguel does it differently, but I would never.
Business layer is different assembly.
Yeah, always different assembly, right? So now, if I was using the portable project library, I can do whatever I want here, right, without being afraid that something's not going to work, because that project's going to stop me to make a mistake to basically create code that's not going to run across the platforms that I selected. in this case, I don't have that yet, right? Remember, it's not that piece is not available at this point. It will be in a couple more months. So I do have to be a little more careful on what I do. So if I'm going to talk to a file, say I'm going to talk to a file, I should use streams and things like that. Because this is a simple, small application, I can get away with it right now. But typically, you want to be careful until you have the portal library project that you can then use to help you, guide you. All right, so that's my view models. And then I have a project for my desktop. And notice here I started calling it, have an actual name for the application. So this is my desktop. And Asaph? Asaph was is a Bible character. You won now because you're a heathen. I'm just messing with you, Miguel. It's actually, he was chief musician. He was a chief musician back in the day. So anyway, so I have that. And the CC Philly is the original name of the application. I didn't want to have to rename that because it was already developed. But notice what I did now, right? For CC Philly, I actually removed view models. You don't see view models here anymore. But I took it away. Same thing now for desktop. Doesn't have, well, it has it, but I can actually take it off because I'm not using it. But what I'm doing is I'm referencing the view model via the actual project, right here. You guys see that? So now this guy is sharing the same view models as my desktop application is. So they're both sharing the view models. Now, the way I implemented my the phone application, I'll show you that in a second. My main page is a panorama page. And what I'm doing here is I'm binding to everything, right? Everything is a collection, so I have all these list boxes. So for the one that gives me the history of the stuff that I've been listening to, I simply bind to the recent collection, and then from there I'm binding to the description of the items, right? I just want to show the name of the study that I just been to. When I show the Bible books to allow me to select a study, I just basically bind to the books collection. Make sense? Very, very simple. Using MVVM, I was able to basically take that same view model to the other project, right? So let me show you my desktop application.
There's one thing about this reusability that you haven't mentioned that I think is starting to be common sense to a couple of people that mentioned this earlier, and that is yet another reason to truly understand why this model is preferred over a Cozy 9 model. You would not have the level of reusability that is being demonstrated here. I didn't mention the reusability part in my talk, because I didn't get into the subject on it, but it should definitely be mentioned.
Yeah, so literally, I took that view model, and then you started binding it here. This is my Silverlight application. Now, I could, if I'm clever enough, I could even reuse some of these controls, some of the sound. What I would have to do is I would have to make them into controls, and then drive the styles out of style files, right, and styles and setters and things like that. But I even want to do that. I just didn't have the time to play around with that. But anyway, notice what I'm doing, right? I'm binding to, where's my list box? Oops, I think I got it up, another view. Here, there you go. I'm binding to books somewhere around here. There you go. Right? I'm binding to books, and I'm just displaying, I'm binding to the book name, right? So you can see how the library, the catalog that gives me book information, I'm binding to here. Then I have another list box here that gives me the actual studies, and you can see, right, I'm binding in this case to, where is it? This box on top, binding to verse by verse, right? Same collection as I was binding to on the phone, and then I'm displaying it here. So now I was able to use the view model that I use in my Windows Phone application. I'm able to bring that over to my desktop application. Let me show you how that's looking like so far.
That's the fact that you redid the item template for the wrap panel.
Yeah, well, I had to, yeah. Now, what's the point that I want to make? I'm not going to show you, like Miguel showed you, like line by line, because I only have about an hour, and I just want to show you everything, right? So I'll give you the code if you want it. I don't care. I mean, it's my application. It's actually, but I'm not selling it. So just if you decide to create an application that looks the same, right, just don't charge for it because the whole point is to have it free. But you can have totally have the cut if you want it. Yeah, like Miguel. All right, so we already saw the Windows Phone application, but look, this is how the desktop application looks like. Right, it looks a lot like the Zoom. I'm trying to maintain that whole Metro look and feel. So here, it's not done. I still have to implement a lot of things. In fact, this has to be done by Philly Cocam, because Philly Cocam, I'm going to start talking about the cloud version of this stuff here. But here, I have libraries. I click on libraries. And I have to fix the algorithm of searching everything. It's a little slow right now. But notice that it's giving me every single study here. And if I go into a book, it's going to filter by book. Same functionality, right? Same functionality. I have to change my resolution so you can't really see. It was basically set to a perfect resolution before, but so I guess that's something that I should fix. I should probably add another scroll bar here or just force the resolution. I don't know. I got to think about that. But you can see, right, I can search now for my studies the same way. It's the same view models. It's the same data that I'm using on my Windows Phone application. Make sense? So now the next step is for me to build the actual play page, right, so that I can then play the studies. And the play page has a couple things. Number one, it needs to be able to have a media element that allows me to point it to a source, to an MP3 file on a server, and start streaming that, right? And I also need the ability to actually open up a browser page and point to the Bible references of that particular study. Right? Those are the two things that I need. I also need a title, the title of the page becomes the name of the name of the study. So let me go ahead and try to do that. So if I go back to the code and go to my play page, things start to look a little bit different here. Well, look at that. I'm not using MEVM. Right? In fact, I'm doing settings of values right on the code behind. This is a no-no. Right? Because now I don't have a view model that I can share with anything. Make sense? All I have here is basically some data that I'm directly binding or setting against my controls properties. Right? I can't take this code out and share it. Even if I try to, first of all, this page here, this class inherits from home page, from application page, which is not available in Silverlight, right? I can then try to change the type that is inherent from, maybe to user control. But again, I will be playing to make sure that the things, you know, still work. They're not going to work. So the bottom line is that I don't have a way to reuse this page anymore because my data is no longer in a portable, or my code is no longer in a portable architecture. So let's try to fix that if we can, right, so that we can make it compatible with both. So the first thing that I need to do is I need to create a view model. Now, just to save a little bit of time, I went ahead and created that. So if I go back to my view models here, I should have a play view model, and I do. And the play view model, for now, it's just going to take basically expose an items view model, which is basically the guy that has the name of the study, the description, the Bible reference, and all that good stuff. And I'm going to implement the iNotify property change, like every good developer should do. So I have that done. Now that I have that and I move all my functionality there, there's another thing that I should do there too, and it's basically add a progress so that I can then bind my progress bar. The problem with that is the progress bar needs to run a timer. Right? The timer can be moved to the view model because I don't want to have a direct direct coupling between my models and my view models and my view. So I have to implement the timer on the view and the code behind. However, I actually still have a property that says basically, you know, player progress. And then just update that property on the view model and bind that to the progress bar. Make sense? Because that way I can still use that functionality in other applications. So the first thing I need to do is I need to remove this stuff here, right? This is not going to work for me. So I'm going to take this out, comment this out. The source is coming it out. Let's comment this out as well. We don't need that. And then we're going to go to our view. From here. and I'm going to start binding to some things. So the first thing I want to do is I want to bind the page title, which I just changed. Page title was here, so I'm going to say binding equals description, I think it was. Okay. Then the media element had a source, so I want to bind that as well. I think I called it, this is for the URL. And then I also had a browser. And I don't have a source. I don't have a, here it is right here. So let's do, oops. I think this is a ref URL, I think. I'll double check that in a second. All right, so now what I've done is I at least have some way to bind to my properties for my view model directly, right? So I changed the view so that I can just bind onto my properties. And I'm going to take the time now, but I should also do the progress bar with the value, right, and then just call it separately. But I have a lot of refactoring to do in this thing here, so let's just keep it like that for now. So then the other thing I need to do is I need to go back to my code behind. You need to somehow get in a view, right? I got to implement or I got to new up a view model here, play view model, so that I can use that against the binding. And that's actually based on this thing. There's different ways that I can do that, but I'm going to take, I'm going to do it the long way, I guess. So instead of binding to this data context, I'm going to come here and say display view model. View model equals new view model. And so I have that. I got to learn how to use CodeRush. And then I am simply going to go here now and say view model that items. Better ways to do this. I'm just, given the fact that I have code that I need to refactor anyway, I'm just going to do the best job possible just to kind of point the, through a point here. So now I'm going to bind this to my view model. I can actually even bind it directly to the items. Okay. Well, let's remove this for now. Or I can just do this. Copy and paste inheritance. Very popular with VB developers. Very popular. Copy and paste inheritance. That was a joke with the VB developers. No, that was a total joke. In fact, this is being recorded, so I should not have said that. Edit. Yeah, no, that was a joke. That was a joke. I did a lot of stuff and still do. All right, so now I have a reference to my view model. Right? I set the item. I set the data context to that view model here. And I am setting, this needs to be date. I'm setting the date so that I can have when was the last time that I actually listened to that study. There you go. And everything else is removed, right? So this should actually work now. Take a look, save that. Let's run it one more time and see what happens. So if I go to an item, there you go, still works. So now what I've done here is I've moved my the data that was powering, or some of the data that was powering that that page, that view, and I moved it to a common file. So then the next step for me is to go in and actually build that view page on my desktop application to implement that view model. Right? Again, there's still a lot of stuff needs to be done on that view. Just giving you just an idea of when to use that. Any questions so far? You have one back there? So the question was, good question. You know, if I have an application today using view models, right, so it's using MVVM, it's an Stable AI application, and I want to migrate that to Windows Phone. You know, what can I use? You know, how easy will that, you know, port of the application be? And it really depends on the code and how you're implementing your view models. In this case, for me, it was literally changing a couple of lines of code where I was hard coding on some things. So, for instance, the way that I was getting the different types of studies, I was hard coding that on the actual view models, right? Instead of passing the type of study from the requester code. So when I said load, it was just loading up, you know, a topical or verse by verse collection. So I just had to remove that code because it was being hard coded to actually take the parameter. Okay, I want topical studies. I want verse by verse. So that was totally a bad practice in my part to begin with. So that's why I had to fix it. So it really depends on how much of those things you have. If your view models are really totally independent from the view, then you should be able to migrate that over almost one to one. Now, there could also be actual code that you're using that's just not available on, for instance, reflection. Let's say that for whatever reason you were using reflection on your view models. Reflection is not available on Windows Phone, right? Because Windows Phone is implemented with the Compact framework, which doesn't have reflection. So it really depends on the things that you're doing. But other than that, it should be a pretty straightforward move. That's a good question. Do we have a list of the things that exist in CivilEye versus Windows Phone? So, there's a couple of blog posts that have the net differences. I don't know them off the top of my head. I'll have to dig that up. But that would be a great thing for me to include on the resource page of this event. So when we blog it and we have all the videos, you know, all that good stuff, I'll make sure that I put a reference to that of the difference between CivilEye and CivilEye on the phone. I can tell you that basically CivilEye on the phone is CivilEye 3 with some things from 4, and then minus some things that just don't make sense, like the browser APIs, plus some things that do make sense, like Microsoft that phone APIs, right? Not for CivilEye. So you cannot run a CivilEye application inside the browser on Windows Phone. Yeah. So the question wasn't really a question, it was just a comment. He said, well, Windows Phone has a browser, and I said, well, it has a browser, but you still cannot run Windows CivilEye applications inside of it.
Touching base on and following up on a question that the lady asked about reusing the view model stuff, probably in favor of. Because of the fact, in this particular example, when you're using a Windows Phone 7 application and then a desktop one was clearly using CivilEye 5. Right?
No.
Okay, so let's say CivilEye
4. It was actually using CivilEye 3.
All right, let's say it's using CivilEye 4, okay. Which has what that CivilEye 3 does not have?
A commanding.
Exactly right. Would putting compiler directives inside your view model help out there? Because that's one thing.
So let me repeat that.
Even the compilation is going to break when you try to compile it on CivilEye 3. So taking those parts out of it, rather than using two different view models, we can put commanding compiler directives in there.
So that was a good question. So basically what he said, well, if those view models were using commanding, they are, okay. So and that's a good feedback, Miguel. If those view models are using commanding, well, Windows Phone doesn't take commanding, right? So that would be an issue there. You could put in, like Miguel said, a compiler directory. How do you call those?
Directives,
yeah. Like, you know, the pound, if, CivilEye, or whatever. I don't like that code, right? I don't like to put those if statements in my code because, I don't like to put them in because, and that's where the portable project, library project will help because it will remove that, right? It will force you to do things in a way that's compatible. Maybe you have a base, you know, view model that just has all your data, and then your commanding is implemented in another view model that basically just inherits from the base view model, right? There's nothing wrong with that. And that might be, you know, something that you do when you refactor this application into a Windows Phone application. That said, I don't know. I really don't know. They told me you got way too mixed, right? When I try to get this information.
Your answer for everything I've asked.
Yeah, well, that's the answer that I've been getting. Maybe Windows Phone will have commanding on the next version. I don't know. Exactly. So it might have it there. So that said, if you need the application today, then you can just simply just take those commands out and then just inherit from that view model without the commanding and create another view model that has the commanding that inherits from the top view model, and then just use the models without the commanding on the Windows Phone application. Any other questions? All right, so just a little recap here. I think I'm just around my time slot. So just a couple of summary points. Number one, whenever possible, whether you're using Silverlight or you're using MVVM, we do want to create code that could be reused in other applications, right? And typically, we all try to do that, and there's some pitfalls with our approaches, with every single approach. The Portable Library Project will help us create code that is generic enough to work across frameworks, .NET 4, Silverlight, Windows Phone, even Xbox. So that will be a great utility that you can use to create code that is basically guaranteed to run across those four devices or those four platforms, and more as we add more frameworks to the .NET family. The other point is that MVVM is just not a nice pattern to use because Miguel is telling you, or because it's the new buzzword in the industry, right? We tend to get these buzzwords in the industry that, when REST came out, everything was REST, right? And even applications with a huge, URL on string, that was REST. The URL is not REST, but everything else is REST. And it's like, people just jump into these bandwagons. Right, and sometimes we don't even know what the word means, and we just say, yeah, we're doing that. Cloud computing, I know hosting companies that say, oh, yeah, we do cloud. Well, what's your cloud story? Specifically, the same product they had 2 years ago, they just now call it cloud, right? So be careful in that you just don't want to use this thing because it's the new buzzword. You want to use it because it's really, really a good way to write WPF, Silverlight, and Windows Phone applications. It maintains better. It tests better. In fact, you can test, a code in your code behind. It's very hard to test it, right? So when you remove that stuff into a view model, your code becomes testable, and then it becomes portable, right? So you just don't want to do it because it's a good thing to do, because it's, it's the fad of the day. You actually want to do it because there are a lot of advantages to creating this separation between your models, your view, and your actual view model. And that's pretty much it. If you guys have any questions, I'll be here all day. Other than that, Steph is going to be next, and he's going to be talking about Prism.